match that puts Ichabod at Chalamont on October 17th. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXE Acra 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather. We look to have a sunny day today, starting in the upper 50s this morning and rising to 70 this afternoon. Tomorrow will be almost identical with lows in the 50s and a high of 70 with a touch more cloud cover leading to some overnight showers. Over on the river, today's high tides will be at 8:25 a.m. and at 8:58 p.m. Low tides will be at 2:54 p.m. and at 3:42 a.m. Water temperature will be 75 degrees. Looking way up, we see Jupiter and our moon cozying up inside the constellation Scorpius after dusk. Current solar wind speed is 552 kilometers per second at 2.6 protons per milliliter. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Don't forget to check out the Thingularity Radio program, brought to you by the Makers, tonight at 7 p.m. on WGXE.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter Brauch of Midland Park, New Jersey. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the Palatial Administrative Offices of the Catskill Makers Syndicate, located at 65 West Bridge Street in the heart of Catskill. We are here to answer any science or technology-related questions you may have. Contact us at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com, or alternatively, you can contact us at www.thingularity.tech. That's thingularity.tech. Okay, once you get there, there's a simple CAPTCHA that you defeat and enter into a box any question that you may have, and it will show up on our screens, and we will be happy to take care of anything that you would like to know. Okay. And now, the Catskill Makers. Everybody say hello.
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 Hi there.
Hello.
Oh, is that Sam Owen I hear?
That's all right.
Sam Owen, imported from parts unknown.
All right, guys, what's up?
Albert.
Ah, yes. Well, NASA project is moving along. We finally got our contracts. I think last month when I was here, we were still waiting. We had our approval, but we didn't have that thing show me the money. You know, now we have that part.
Oh, they gave you the
going
check.
For us.
The check.
Not the check. See, because we're a private companies are a little different. If we were, say, a university or a city or something like that, we would get money up front. But because we're a private business, we actually have to go seeking loans and other means of money. Or they maybe assume we already have lots of money. I don't know. Which we
and
don't.
They refund you after you build it's your giant telescope in the sky.
It's a refund after, which is quarterly refunds, though. We don't have to go for two straight years without getting a refund. But
oh, grants make me so tired.
It is a tricky process, though.
Rebates. Honestly.
It's been a little stressful.
Hold on to those receipts.
Yeah, hold on to those receipts. We have a meeting next week with some potential investors/loaners.
So, like, if you get a Big Mac and the large fries, can you apply that to the NASA grant? Or
you see, that would be a business meeting.
We
have to write it off as that.
Yeah, we did include some money in there for sustenance. I believe we labeled it in the proposal.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
You got to keep those scientists fed, people.
Not bad.
Yeah, that's going to poison your brain, though.
And we have our holographer. One of our holographers came from
Chicago or
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Yeah, she's now at. Well, actually, a couple of you guys came and helped us install a very expensive telescope mirror. It's going to be part of the process.
How did that go?
It went really smooth, actually.
We didn't break it or scratch it or molest it in any way.
Hooray!
So the house cost mirror is fine.
And by that, he means. It probably cost more than your house.
It did.
Roughly how much is this mirror that's now located in Cairo?
I believe we're not allowed to talk about prices on the show. So
basically worth more than Cairo itself, probably.
I don't think we're selling the mirror.
Wow, that's messed up.
Hey, it's sure Cairo. Everything is for sale.
Wow.
Six Damn. Figures. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, for a mirror. This is custom made, like a while back. This is an older mirror.
Is that a flat or...
It's actually very close to a perfect parabola with a 10-foot focal length. And it's 30 inches in diameter, which for people who don't know anything about mirrors, that's very big.
So I wouldn't be able to hang it on my door.
You could. It probably weighs about 150 pounds.
Hmm. Nice. And since it's smooth and perfectly focused like that, you don't need any special equipment to rectify it after that?
No, we're trying to actually put a laser beam right at the focal point so that it comes off. In a plane as
nice.
Opposed to...
Nice.
So it comes out perfectly focused after it reflects.
So Albert, what is a parabola?
A parabola is one of the conic sections, which we can go really deep if you want to...
I don't know.
If you remember from high school geometry class, or maybe algebra, it's the kinds of equations where you're solving x squared plus bx plus c equals 0.
And you're plotting this all on a graph so that it can be mathematically laid out.
Well, it's a little bit.
I'm thinking like a point of light at a certain distance from the point of that parabola could hit every point on it and then reflect back all straight and parallel lines, right?
Correct. And it works with sound too. You may have heard of places where you can like sit in a little cone and you talk in a normal voice. I believe there's something like this in a subway somewhere. Forget where
they have those in a lot of museums and different installations, and some architectural buildings actually do this naturally, where you just basically stand in a corner and you whisper. Nobody else in the room will hear it unless they're sitting at another focal
point.
Exactly,
They can hear you whispering.
A parabola is a special shape that has a focal point, and if you sit at this point, or if you project a light or any kind of wave at this point, all of the light or sound comes off parallel. And conversely, if you project a sound at a parabola, all of it comes focused to a point, so it can gather a faint sound and concentrate it onto a small area.
Kind of like a telescope.
Do these parabolas have to have the same shape at either end, sending and receiving?
Yeah.
Cool.
Should be.
All right. Okay.
And that was the parabola. Explanation.
What else can we say
about 98% of people out there are like, what is he talking about?
Oh, just wait till I get into geometric constructions next.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. That'll be for Halloween, maybe. Scare some people.
What else
can we say about NASA?
How?
Well, that's how we started off, talking about the NIAC grant.
Well, there's a bunch of projects going on with NASA at the moment. One of them is the OSIRIS-REx craft, which is going after the asteroid Bennu. And it is currently, I believe OSIRIS-REx is about the size of a small minivan, and it's circling Bennu. NASA's been getting a lot of telemetry from it, mostly pictures, and a little bit of probing of the gravitational nature of Bennu itself. One of the cool things that it's done is it's taken a higher orbit than they expected, and they're looking down at all the particles that are raining around Bennu. Some of these shoot up, some skip off, and some form an orbit around it. And if you watch and snap photos of the orbit of all these small particles traveling around Bennu, you can basically map its gravitational effect all through it, where it's dense and where it's light.
Because a body of that size is not homogeneous, right?
Oh, no, that thing is like lopsided. It's like two big, like,
but
balls
slammed
together.
It's internal structure, I mean, like kind of like how Phobos and Deimos, the moons of Mars, they have some dense rocky parts, but a lot of their surface is really just dust.
Yes, I believe it's like that. They expected the surface to be dust, but it's mostly rocks and boulders.
Is this pure research? Why are they mapping this body?
Why not?
We're going to run out of iron and stuff on Earth, you know? How are we going to build the ring world, man?
That's actually part of the mission is to retrieve some samples from the same thing.
How far? And bring it back?
Yes.
How far is it?
I do not know how far away it is at the moment. But what they are going to do is lower a filter down to the surface, and they're going to collect small rock pieces that are less than an inch in diameter above a micron.
Oh,
and
wow.
Whatever collects on that filter will be captured up, sealed, and sent back home.
Oh, wow.
We're going to collect it here and then parse it out and see what's going on. And part of the reason that NASA wants to do that is the rocks and the composition of Bennu is very similar to the early solar system. What we see there is going to be a photograph of how our solar system used to be.
Okay.
Wow. The De Beers family is shaking in their boots for all those giant diamonds we're going to find. Asteroids and bring back to Earth. Breaking that monopoly.
Diamonds the size of a minivan will be back here. Like, oh, it's worth nothing. We always knew it was worth nothing. Now we know.
That value is placed on them by humans that like sparkly things. To the rest of us, we like them for their industrial use. Mm. Those things are hard, and they can drill through almost anything.
Yeah.
Including other diamonds. Right.
And they can always market that, like, well, it's not really a diamond, unless it's a blood diamond.
Well, I recall watching a documentary decades ago where some guy from another planet squeezed some coal in his hand and turned it into a diamond. I don't know what that was. It was some dude who flew around a lot, and he could make diamonds in his hands.
And he was mimicking what is also our current technology, where we can subject coal to enough pressure and heat to form it into actual diamond, not like fake or zirconium or anything like that. Real diamond. So,
They're beyond zirconium. You can make an actual diamond, though.
That is correct. Not necessarily in someone's hand. This is a giant machine that's basically a cone stomping up and down, putting all of its pressure into one small point, causing this to happen.
Well, I guess Superman ain't so super anymore, is he?
Oh, no. We're phasing him out.
He needs to get himself a strong hand to crush that diamond.
That's cool. I didn't know that. We're beyond where you actually make diamonds.
That's
beyond.
We can manufacture most diamonds. Industrial diamonds are made.
But it's expensive?
Relatively. I mean, it takes a lot of energy to get it going.
Okay. Definitely a diamond tool, a diamond encrusted tool is more expensive than, say, a nitride or carbide encrusted tool or ruby encrusted tool.
Carbon.
But, yeah.
But diamond tips are used for, like, grinding valves and such, too, in engine repair.
Oh, yeah, for honing cylinders and stuff like that.
Actually just making machine tools out of carbide. Mm. Mm. They use diamond grinders or other abrasive grinders.
Okay.
Huh, I wonder what they use to grind down titanium, or if they use diamond for that. Because I know that is very hard to machine.
Aluminum oxide. Standard stuff you find.
Cody had the answer.
In a belt.
Really?
And your standard abrasive belt, yep.
What, do you just wear it away like crazy?
Essentially.
Mm. Okay.
You said titanium, right?
Yes, titanium.
Titanium, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I was watching tests recently where titanium was deflecting bullet shots. And I mean, serious caliber, like, I think they shot a 50 cal in it, and it fractured the bullet.
How thick? I mean, it will fracture the
bullet. The titanium was, like, less than a half inch thick. It was thin.
What?
Might have been active armor.
It was 3D printed, which apparently when you 3D print
titanium...
That's
even more brittle. How does that even work?
No.
It's
what
probably
happens
active armor, something that...
When you 3D print titanium, what you can do is you can adjust the grain so that it's even stronger than standard forged titanium. So if you print it, it's tougher if you do it right. This was seen on an episode of Savage Builds where Adam Savage constructs a titanium suit of armor.
Okay.
Is that his Iron Man suit?
Yes.
Oh,
and it worked.
Okay.
And someone put it on and flew a jet, so yeah.
I saw that. That was cool.
It's possible.
Imagine the jet engine going out while you're in the air in the titanium suit. You wouldn't survive like in the movies.
But the suit would. The suit would be just fine.
So do you think if we made something like that suit of armor and then mounted our jet engines to it, we could...
We could hurt ourselves, yes.
No. We could do something cool without hurting ourselves.
Probably. Well, we should test it on animals first. I hear that's how you're supposed to do it.
We're talking about, what was that, 70 pounds of thrust out of each engine? That means that...
75 before afterburners.
Yeah, it's not going to do anything. You're basically going to be able to walk around, and you're going to have a really, really fancy leaf blower.
Yeah.
Or if you're Russian, snow melter.
Or if you're Catskillian.
If only they would let us do that.
Hey, it's roughly the same mechanics as a propane grill. I think we could get away with it. No, we're not making suggestions to anyone out there, but I think we could get away with it.
Oh, man.
All right.
We guys got anything coming up in news?
No, nothing news is happening. We're in a dark age where nobody cares about fact and science.
And that's the cynic section.
Oh, I'm sure we have drummed some things up from the interwebs. Cody, what do you got?
And segueing from the cynic section into another cynical segment. Here's a headline. San Francisco Gate. Doorbell camera firm Ring. That's a company. Teams with 400 police forces extending their surveillance reach. So, Ring makes Internet of Things doorbell cameras. So that if somebody rings your doorbell and you're not home, you can look in on them and see who's there.
That sounds awfully convenient.
Yes, it's all based on an app that you can load on your phone, so that way, whenever you feel the slightest bit insecure, you can check on your home.
Will people be able to do anything else during the day?
No, they'll be too busy keeping an eye on their pets and watching their plants grow.
Actually, the app works pretty good. What it does is that every time anything moves in front of your camera, it gives you a notification on your phone, so you're being bothered every time a leaf blows in front of it every 5 minutes.
And just to be clear, these cameras are mounted basically where your doorbell would go. So anything that would be viewed by a peephole in your door would be viewed by one of these cameras.
Or wherever you want to put them. I mean,
do they also have microphones?
Yes.
Yes, they do.
And you can turn a siren on, and you can turn a light on some of them. They're very interactive.
Now, don't miss the part where I said that 400 police forces have access to these things.
Yes, which is why we're talking about how useful these things are at collecting data from cameras, recording all the video that's going on outside of your house, to also the audio. Police love this sort of information, and they use it not only for solving in particular crimes, but they like to aggregate this data for basically predicting crimes and finding out which neighborhoods are, say, hot spots for break-ins.
So you said this is an Internet of Things device?
Yes, it is.
That means it'll be up to date and secure all the time, right?
At least until the company goes out of business.
No problems. Absolutely.
That's what Internet of Things means, right?
Yeah.
Keep in mind that up to date itself could be its own problem. Just like in those, I believe it was also Ring-based door locks. They were electronic internet devices, door locks, that needed an upgrade to their software. And the wrong locks got the wrong upgrade, which all occurred automatically over Wi-Fi while people were away at work, and when they got home, their locks were inoperable. They could not unlock them. They could not use them.
They don't have actual keyholes in them?
No, they're magnetically operated internally, and to operate it, you have to use your app, you have to be online, you have to connect to it.
Or have a large magnet.
It turns out a lot of people in the tech world don't have good engineering experience mechanically and don't think of redundancy. And
What?
Or the companies themselves don't give you enough time to do those as they chase new features, then they don't take care of what's already out there and go bankrupt, which certainly will not happen again. We will not have another .com crash, despite the fact that there are 5 apps for everything you can do on Earth.
It'll be dot, dot something else, right?
Dot to IoT. What do we call it?
Oh, yeah. You want to keep talking about IoTs and apps being a pain? How about all the Tesla owners that got locked out of their cars because their app stopped working for several hours?
Nest thermostats also?
Speaking of Tesla, for the hurricane, Tesla unlocked some extra mileage on some cars.
Yes.
Unlocked mileage?
This is what's what's known as an anti-feature.
Yeah, apparently, I think it's the Model 3 has like a 75-watt-hour battery that they cap at like 60.
It's a safety feature. If you run it down too much, it might explode.
No, it's not a safety feature. It's literally because you didn't pay for the better model, and they don't have a way of really, neutering the car correctly. So they just
DRM it.
Yes, they load the software up.
Downgrade your amp hours.
I think it's more accurately described as a paywall.
Paywall your own car.
Which you can literally drive into, and then your car stops working because you exceeded your operational area.
This reminds me of what happened to my 1974 Ford Courier pickup the other day. I couldn't start it, so I hotwired it with a paperclip.
Well, you see, this can't happen with a modern Tesla because there isn't even a key or a key fob. The Teslas are designed the car itself around an application that's in a phone. So you have to have that app. You have to have an active phone, and it has to be all working, or else your car won't recognize you, and it will not operate.
Oh, and your battery stops not charging after a year or two, and then your key is this active, smart thing that's... Wow, I just love the cyberpunk future we live in.
Now, I just want to point out, kids who are probably not paying attention right now, you're being conditioned to accept paywalls by your games and other industries, this man, Brian, just volunteered a potentially valuable piece of information about himself. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I just bought a Nintendo Switch. I got so tired.
Oh, did you really?
Wait. Uh-oh. Yeah. Two Nintendo Switch owners.
I can't stand the idea of microtransactions and paying for a game for the rest of my life. Well, I just want to spend some money up front and
have the game, and then
have the game.
Did you get Breath of the Wild?
Doesn't matter. That's the first game I bought.
All right, good. I was just telling Brian he needs to play.
It's the only reason I personally bought it.
Me too.
I bought Mario Kart for my kids too.
Yeah, I bought it for my wife. I basically got Breath of the Wild for myself.
Yeah. Well, my 9-year-old likes Breath of the Wild. He's old enough to get it.
Lame. What about all that Labware stuff or Labo gear that you
Labo
can get for
was
the Switches?
Pretty cool until my daughter destroyed all the cardboard. Now I
kids destroy cardboard.
Yeah.
Talk about how cool it would be if she, didn't destroy it or had an infinite supply.
Well, if we actually use the creation part of
what's
the game,
coolest Labo
cooler.
Toy that you got to play with?
The coolest one that I played with or the one that she enjoyed the most?
That you played with and then the one she enjoyed the most.
So I think the coolest one that I played with was probably the little motorcycle one because it actually works for other games.
Describe it. Does this thing like run around on the ground? What?
No, it's literally a little cardboard thing you hold to your chest, and it's a little fake steering wheel you mount the Switch in, and you can turn it.
So it's a controller.
So
the cool thing is they added support for Mario Kart, so you can actually play Mario Kart with that Labo controller.
Oh, that's awesome.
Does it look like a steering wheel or a motorcycle handlebar?
Yeah, it looks like a motorcycle handlebar. Okay. You have to like hold to your chest you have to lean a little bit.
Now, Albert, you said that you weren't interested in paying for a game the rest of your life. You know what? The truth is, you won't have to. You'll just have to pay for the game until it's no longer profitable for that company to continue running the game.
Ah, but the Switch has cartridges.
That's true. But I'm just saying, what happens in the industry nowadays is that companies will kill off games because they're so heavily based on the server side software.
That's true. That
well,
is
that's
true.
More you, games as a service, too.
Right. I'm just saying it's part of the profit model.
Yeah, I remember when they shut down the Matrix online game, even though it was actually still, you know, kind of doing okay, but, you know, just wasn't still profitable enough.
That was early in the lifetime, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. That game didn't last very long.
But, no, I think it lasted about 4 or 5 years past, you know, the last movie. Because I remember it being sometime in the late 2000s.
Oh, they're going to make another Matrix movie, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about it?
Oh,
you,
yeah.
If anybody would know, you would.
One, the Wachowskis is back directing. Keanu and Carrie Ann are back.
How is that going to work?
I don't know.
But didn't they already go through the arc? What are they going to do new? Like,
I know.
It's going to be Roblox Matrix? What's going to happen?
I mean, maybe they'll finally go into the idea, you know, the whole Matrix within Matrix's theory. Or, I mean, I guess it's just maybe things went back to regress and now they need the one again. I don't know.
Like regression testing?
Yeah.
Or they're going to save us with one big dream sequence over the second and third movie. Neo's just going to wake up, end of the first one, back to work.
It was all a dream. Again.
That, within a dream, within the Matrix, ends. Wrapped in an enigma.
Right. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that requel in it. I mean, the last I had heard was like they were considered a Morpheus prequel, but not now. It's just like a straight up sequel.
Quantum.
Well, at least I'm used to sequels. I like sequels, and I'm getting really tired of prequels.
Oh, yeah.
But that's another rant for another show.
Okay.
Okay, anybody else have anything they want to bring up or talk about before it's over? I know that on one of the news articles that what's coming out is they're starting to make devices that are basically small routers that have built-in VPN and Tor capability.
What's a Tor?
What does that even mean?
What's a VPN?
Teach me to read.
Would anybody like to answer any of these?
Watch Vietnam.
It's not a VPN.
Albert, would you like to answer what a VPN is?
Virtual Private Network.
Thank
so
you.
It's simulating a router in software, which just brings up so
and
many more
what
questions.
What would I need one of those for?
VPNs are great.
It's good for security because it prevents your... Well, one thing is, you know, another topic in tech that just totally gets ignored, unlike telephones back in the day where phone companies were supposed to treat the telephone line as sort of a dumb pipe, like sort of you turn on your pipe, I want some water. I don't,
a utility.
I don't buy water as a service. I just want water.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't buy telephone as a service. I just want to make a phone call. So now even your internet service provider is using you as a service. So they're taking your data because they're in between what's coming out of, you know, when you make a request on the internet, it first passes through your ISP. They snoop on your traffic, extract information out of it, and then sell that so that they can give you targeted ads within their own network. So VPN can stop your ISP from snooping on you, and it also can stop a lot of other bad actors from
snooping on you. It can also stop third parties from snooping on you.
Yeah.
As the internet is wont to do nowadays.
Does anybody expect any like pushback from the content providers and the stacks that make money off of us to get around VPNs? Or?
Oh, yeah. Like Netflix, they geolock. People will go through a VPN to make it look as if their connection is coming from another country in order to get access to certain TV shows. Because Netflix doesn't want to show them.
Well, it's not just Netflix.
It's an invisible war going on.
There's
that most people
Hulu,
don't even know about, right?
Amazon Prime, all sorts of streaming services.
And then as a counterattack in that war, some of the VPNs are geared just for Netflix and Hulu and other streaming services. And they are designed and advertise themselves specifically to defeat them so that if you pay for their service, you can pretend to be British and still get British Netflix, etc.
Mm. Wow.
Do they call that Postflix?
No, it's called Netflix, just, you know.
But I'm thinking, I mean, the other thing, too, is, like, Netflix is not the big... Netflix, Hulu, go 3, 4, 5 years back, they owned everything because everybody was convenience. But now that everybody's getting their own service, CBS, everybody else is streaming, it's like the money is out of it and piracy is up, right?
So do you think the fracturing of all the streaming services is going to crash streaming services to begin with?
Not necessarily, but that's
leading
to what Brian's talking about.
But there's a right-sizing going on in the market itself.
Right,
like every other .com bullshit mark.
Because now Disney's bringing up a streaming service.
No swearing.
No, they're there. Yeah. CBS. Everybody has something, and they're all getting a piece of it.
Yeah, and Warner Brothers are actually HBO Max, is what they're calling it.
So who's going to pay the
I think PBS.
The onboard is like $9 a month for everybody. You're not going to go back to paying $100, $140 a month.
Yeah, that's
like
for
your cable
each
thing.
Individual one. And
there's another step that's coming up, right?
Well, it'll probably be more because each one's going to be like $10. Say you want 10 channels, you know.
Does that mean that we should start a service where we can aggregate all of these things and sell them under one umbrella?
We won't do that.
There might be some Russian, Chinese, or
IPTV,
someone else.
Well, back to the point of these little boxes. Another thing that they do is they route your data through the Onion Router Network, which is basically
it's made of onions.
No, it's made of hundreds, if not thousands,
of onions.
Onion router nodes. Developed by the CIA long ago, this is a network used for...
Navy CIA was like an ARPA, Navy CIA kind of thing? Was it DOD? Yeah.
DARPA.
Okay, DARPA.
Take your pick. Apparently everybody had their finger in the pot.
Oh, yeah.
And that's fine because our agents needed secure communications, and that's what the Onion Router provides. It basically takes your data, it encrypts it somewhat, and then splits it up into a bunch of different packages. Those packages are then sent to a bunch of different nodes on the network. And through several different routes through the network, all of your data sent going back and forth recombines from the source to the endpoint, all as one big full package. Okay, folks, time is running out for our first segment, and we're going to be switching over to our station ID. You are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Okay, station ID complete.
Was that it? Was that all we have to do?
That
seemed very simplified, and there's not much to that.
Well, let me try.
I like that.
Oh, no. WGXC 90.7 FM Acra, music for open ears.
Now that's more like it.
All righty. I think we've thoroughly covered that, and now we move on to our bio break with Cody.
All righty then. Straight from the mind of the supreme mechanist, this is the segment where I try to ruin anything and everything biological for you. If there's a single aspect of living in a wetware meat suit you do not find discomforting, don't despair. I have something for every optimist. Today's bio break is iodine redux. It's a halogen element in the same family as chlorine, fluorine, and our special darling today, bromine. And it's necessary in pretty much every tissue of your body. Have you heard of your thyroid?
Did you say tushy or tissue?
Did I say tushy?
I heard
tushy. I meant tissue.
Cool, so it's not just in your tushy.
No, it's every tissue, including your tush.
Excellent. Sorry to make you lose your spot.
Yep. So, have you heard of the thyroid? It's a small gland sitting in the front of your neck that regulates, among other things, your production of vitamin D and how much calcium and phosphorus are stolen from your bones by vitamin D.
Stolen from your bones? I thought vitamin D was good for you. That's why they put it in milk.
Well, that's an interesting subject, and it's mostly tangential to what I'm going to talk about today. But needless to say, if you have an excess of vitamin D in your blood, it will begin stealing calcium and phosphorus minerals. It's a mineral transporter.
So it'll basically work like a solvent and just start pulling it out of your bones?
That's right.
Awesome.
Wait. Really? What the hell?
Yes.
That doesn't sound healthy.
Drink your milk.
Maybe I'll scare you for Halloween.
It counteracts all the calcium in the milk. There's too much calcium.
Is that true?
No. All
right. That was a joke.
So the linchpin of your thyroid's health and its functions is iodine. Now, in 1924... Salt manufacturers
at the back of the class. Somebody's eating.
Yep. The back of the class.
Somebody's eating.
We have the Ludens.
Ludens candy. I hope they brought enough for the entire class.
In 1924, the salt manufacturers in Michigan were asked during a rise of goiter incidents that they begin doping a portion of their salt with potassium iodide. The fact is, the brown salt they were mining and selling previously already included iodine impurities. So from whence came the goiter? Refining. The answer is refining, where they take out every mineral and leave behind an almost pure white sodium chloride. 20 years later, a bill came before Congress to mandate that all salt that's sold as table salt be iodized to address goiter. Never mind that already the cases of goiter had dropped by 90% due to effort on the salt maker's part, and iodized salt sales were up 70% nationally. They didn't need to introduce a bill. Why did the government push potassium iodide? Well, potassium iodide, little known fact, is known to retard the process of phosphorylation, without which your cells are barely making the energy necessary for life. Think about this one. The same government pushes for chlorinated and fluorinated water, halogens which competitively bind iodine receptors and proteins in the body.
But aren't these necessary for, say, having clean drinking water and healthy teeth?
I get by with just ceramic filters and granulated carbon filters.
Okay, and, you know, toothpaste should pretty much cover it too, right?
Toothpaste, all you need is calcium carbonate, man.
All right.
Baking soda.
Yep, baking soda as an abrasive.
So would they be better off if they, say, were to use UV light to sterilize water instead of chlorine?
I think that's even probably what labs use for actual sterilization.
Right, so that way you're not contaminating the water with anything.
You can definitely buy those setups.
Well, go look at the back of your water bill, nice. Your town water bill, and you'll see that it's been warning for the past probably 5 years, I'm not sure, about trihalomethanes, and that's part of what makes the town's water supply smell so bad, is that rotting vegetation combines with all of the chlorine they dose the water with into something that is not quite considered a carcinogen, but maybe it is in California.
So where it's strict, it's probably not allowed because it's probably poisonous to you.
Yeah. Potentially, yeah.
Well, that's what you get when you suck your water out of a pond.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it's chemicals which few would question produce poisons to humans.
Yeah, that's where we get our water.
Except
small lake up.
Highly educated and lettered persons. No offense, Albert. You're not that kind of person, I know.
Albert's into book learning. We all know that.
So, speaking of halogens, the FDA loves to give bromine a pass. And a look the other way. They saw potassium bromate in breads. Potassium bromate in breads had a deleterious effect on man in 1992, and again in 1999, ignoring the results of their studies, which showed that bread contained it in very high levels, more than what would be safe, more than you'd probably take just on its own as a powder. Hmm. And now that's mostly been replaced with iodates, the iodine replacement for that. And that darling bromine can now be found in your average citrus soda pop. As brominated vegetable oil is what I'm talking about now. Mm. So keep up, folks.
Is that some sort of preservative?
Or like, it's why a do they put thickener. It it's a thickener.
Wait, your sodas need thickeners?
Well, you see the flavoring that they put into brands like Mountain Dew and Mountain Lightning? They're not soluble in water. They won't disperse in water.
Okay.
So they need something that's like, I think it's bipolar or dual polar?
No, it could be lipophilic or hydrophilic. If it dissolves in water, it would already be polar.
Okay.
Right.
Because water is bent.
A polar solvent.
Yeah, whereas oils are not. So you need something that isn't polar to dissolve in oil.
Right. And so they whip that up and it keeps it emulsified. It keeps the flavor emulsified. So what you're drinking is like soybean oil that's gone through the process of halogenation, and it's the carrier for the flavor. You're drinking flavored oil, and the water's to
delicious.
Water it down.
So that's what makes Mountain Dew so delicious in all its analogs.
Sure.
Okay.
And bromine, like its other halogen buddies, in excess, will derange your thyroid functions, also causing lethargy, memory loss, joint stiffness, and other neurologic problems. Now, keep in mind, methyl bromide is one of the most toxic biocides used to kill insects and weeds.
Oh, that's interesting.
Do you really want to be putting bromine vegetable oil, brominated vegetable oil into your body?
Well,
dude, I smoked for like 20 years. I don't care. And it goes, it'd be great.
I used to wash my hands in lacquer thinner when I was 5 to 10 years old. That's how we did it.
Oh, yeah, we used to wash everything off with the gasoline.
Yeah, but it's everything real clean.
However, yeah, when you pour it directly in yourself, there's your liver then has to do something.
Do not pour directly into eyeballs.
Oh, yeah.
Now, let me just smack you all you faithful listeners, with the crystalline pure evil idea. Here it is. Is bromine slowly poisoning you as it releases from your stored fats, keeping you sedated and biologically incapable of achieving your potential? Mm. What's potassium iodide's role in our biomechanoid system? Iodine is necessary in every tissue of your body. What is iodide's role in the body at the recommended daily allowance of micrograms? Is that just enough to suppress your subclinical goiter as your pancreatic and adrenal glands burn the midnight vegetable oils?
I'm touching my neck. I can feel it getting bigger.
Yeah,
do I have a goiter? You're making me paranoid.
Well,
seaweed is a great source of natural iodine. By the way.
But you're saying the bromine, that just basically just destroys a certain natural process where you need iodine and absorbed into you.
Well, I'm saying that it's probably poisoning you.
Probably poisoning us.
The potassium iodide's covering up the effect at the level that it's being consumed, which is in micrograms. Whereas cultures like Japan and other cultures that traditionally eat seaweed,
yeah,
they have a much lower incidence of goiter and seaweed. You eat a little bit of seaweed, and it gives you doses on the level of milligrams.
Okay,
that's an order of magnitude more.
Yeah, yeah, that's
you might even get grams if you eat over, you know, maybe a week of eating sushi.
Yeah, that's probably why there's a different level of general health in Japan and here. Or as others might say, Asians don't raisin.
All right.
No, that's interesting, though. Like, there's so many chemicals in our food, but to, like, narrow down on one particular thing like this, but to think that there's probably dozens of other stuff that are used in our backwards food systems.
This is just a board slap upside your heads. I'm just... The reality is, it's a continuum.
A continuum.
It all fits into a continuum, and each point connects to every other point.
A continuum, yeah.
Alrighty. Until we get this the structural level of health that we have in this country right now.
Yeah. Man, just go into the market and buy something out of a package.
No, I think somebody should play a song about the pancreas.
The pancreas?
Ooh, a pancreas. Yes.
Well,
there's even such
where's
a
our
thing?
Conductor? Well, he's left the building.
I suppose that is a signal that we are done with our bio break.
No, that was no, it's still I'm feeling for my goiter still, man. It's like
I'm eating carrots so deeply to a microphone.
Attracts every other pancreas in the universe with a force proportional to the product of their masses and inversely proportional to the distance between them.
Don't you know you gotta flow, pancreatic juice, flow, into the duodenum, won't you flow, pancreatic juice, flow, into the duodenum, won't you flow,
insulin, glucagon, juice, coming from the islands of Longyearbyen's insulin, glucagon, juice, coming from the islands of Longyearbyen's.
Okay, welcome back to the Thingularity Radio Program. If you would like to contact us with any of your questions, you can reach us at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com, and you can also reach us at www.thingularity.tech. And now we have Corey with this month's history in science.
Okay, September 1st, 1887, Emil Berliner filed patent for the lateral cut flat disc gramophone. Edison received the fame, but Berliner's legacy lived on through his RCA-adopted trademark, a picture of a dog listening to his master's voice from a gramophone. September 2nd, 1752, the last day of the Julian calendar dawned in the United Kingdom and its colonies. 11 days were skipped to pave the way for the Gregorian calendar. And forgotten geek fact, listen to that next Tuesday, 11 a.m. The 11 missing days played a major role in the unofficial Doctor Who book / audio spinoff series, Faction Paradox. September 3rd, 1976, Viking 2 landed on and took the first surface pictures of Mars. September 4th, 1888, George Eastman was issued the patent for his box camera and trademarked the name Kodak. September 8th, 1854, Dr. John Snow did know something as he removed the handle on London's Broad Street water pump, halting further spread of cholera from a leaking sewage cesspool. September 9th, 1945, who would have thought, Grace Hopper found the first...
You can't mix your feces with your water supply? Is that a rule?
Look, at some point, somebody had to figure that out. Which means that before then, at every point, human beings looked at the combination of feces, urine, and water and thought, hey, that's all right.
Well, I think was spread by dumping poo out the window, you know, because people went in bedpans when there was no running water and you just...
Yep, and then you have your pathogen load all over the street.
And an explosion of the rat population.
Yeah.
I think, well, even by feudal times, some people were starting to get the idea that, like, oh, maybe you should do that downriver, you know.
So. Not too many, because that whole song, Ashes, Ashes, We All Fall Down.
Mm-hmm.
The Pocket Full of Posies was about how the upper class believed that good smells could prevent sickness.
And they also used the posies to keep the smell of the dead out of their nostrils.
Yeah, there's that too.
So you're saying the more modern we get, sometimes we can get dumber? I'm sure that doesn't ever happen.
There might be a word for that.
It's two steps forward, one step back sometimes. What do you want?
Devolution?
The technological devolution.
Okay. September 9th, 1945, Grace Hopper found the first computer program bug using tweezers to remove a moth from a relay and taping it to the log.
Yes! Yes!
And that is where the term bug comes from.
September 11th, 1822, the Catholic Church announced they were officially accepting Galileo's Copernican principle. 1978, British medical...
What year was that?
Yeah, jump in anytime.
What year was that?
Oh, it was 1822.
But they officially apologized to him in like the 1970s or 80s, right?
My original notes were like, I think it was a few more decades. They finally took the book off the ban list. Yeah. It may have even been a century. And then, yeah, it wasn't until the 90s that they officially apologized.
Like the late 20th century. Sorry we slammed you and killed you all those centuries
sorry,
ago.
We were zealots, you know.
They didn't kill him, right?
Well, no.
No, they locked him away, essentially, into a tower.
They turned him to a social pariah.
Just give him the tiniest bit of credit for, you know, actually, finally, a little bit admitting they were wrong.
Centuries.
Our bad.
Centuries.
So, 1978, British medical photographer Janet Parker was the last recorded smallpox death.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yay, smallpox!
Yay, eradication of smallpox. Oh.
Yeah.
I thought we were celebrating
yay
smallpox.
Until somebody yay gets vaccines. One of those few samples that are left.
Yeah, we still have, 1,400 bioweapons labs biological research labs.
Oh, smallpox is still around.
There.
It's there sitting in a jar waiting to be unleashed on the population that has no immunity to it and no vaccines whatsoever.
We'll use it when we need it again. You just be quiet.
Okay, look.
Is there a way we could weaponize this 100%?
If you're worried about smallpox, then you should probably not listen to me describe to you how we have high schools across the country designing new biological... What do you want to call it? And it's a whole new bacteriums that are designed by classes. And some of them graduate to the point where they can actually use CRISPR to make them from scratch. They take these genomes and then they inject them into working bacteriological bodies. And then you have a new life form. And these are high schoolers.
Well, that's going to make the whole school shootings problems like a minor.
Exactly. When I was in high school, you would not have wanted to give me access to that sort of thing.
Wow.
And if you want to hear more about clustered, regularly interspaced, what was it?
You know, I don't know.
Small palindromic repeats?
What does that even mean?
You can listen to the Halloween show about CRISPR.
Next episode.
That's going to be scary. Wait,
the next episode is going to be very scary.
I like this.
All right, Corey, please continue.
Okay, 1958, the first integrated circuit was demonstrated by Jack Kilby to his supervisor at Texas Instruments. September 13th, 1899, Henry H. Bliss became the first American automobile fatality when he stepped into the path of a horseless carriage driven by Arthur Smith.
Horseless? Like it was an electric vehicle?
That's what they called cars back then.
Horseless carriage, so it was electric, steam, and gas.
Gasoline, I believe.
So gasoline was actually one of the least popular versions of it in the early days.
Right. The competition was strong back then.
Well, people didn't have any expectations to go 1,000 miles, but... You know, electric and steam were actually dominant technologies in the early days. They were all horseless carriages. Anyway.
Okay, September 16th, 1835, Charles Darwin arrived at the Galapagos Archipelago aboard the HMS Beagle, spending 5 weeks there to study fauna.
Darwin!
For the win! September 18th, 1927, Columbia Phonograph Broadcasting System began broadcasting from 47 radio stations. It was sold 2 years later and renamed the Columbia Broadcasting System, or CBS. September 23rd, 1846, German astronomer Johann G. Gall discovered Neptune after an hour of searching based off computations by Urbain Jean-Joseph Le Verrier. September 27th, 1892, Joshua Pusey received a patent for book matches, which he subsequently sold to the Diamond Match Company.
Wow.
September 29th.
I bet he was kicking himself.
September 29th, 1988, Space Shuttle Discovery launched from Cape Canaveral, ending America's suspension of manned space flight in the wake of the Challenger disaster. And finally, September 30th, 1846, ether was used as an anesthetic for the first time in a dental operation at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston.
And before that, you were expected to just grin and bear it, right?
Yeah.
You'd bite on a stick.
I cut it, but this was also the, I think, sometime earlier in that month, some year, it was also the first time cocaine was used as an anesthetic.
Oh, so how long until they combined them?
Which year?
I think that was like probably a few years before that. I can't remember exactly. No. It was after. It was like late. I think it was 1890 something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's for ether, it was 1846. But yeah, I think cocaine was first used. Maybe it was more like 1880. But
definitely didn't want to have dental surgery before that, right?
Mm. Oh, I could just imagine.
They just load you up with whiskey.
Just rip out the tooth.
And that way you go, yeah?
No, you can't, like, chew on a bone, you know.
Because it's in your... Yeah.
No, you're not going to be biting a bullet mouth, for this one, no.
Not too far from the time you could go down to your druggist and buy some Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Which was infused not with cocaine, but it was brewed with coca leaves.
Close enough, man.
Close enough.
Tell me about it. That stuff
I
is great.
It still is. They just extract the drug out of it. And Coca-Cola is the number one provider of medical grade cocaine.
Because they have to extract it from the thing and they give the other thing to Coca-Cola, yeah.
Yeah, Coca-Cola takes the cocaine out, sells it to pharmaceutical companies, and then they still use elements of the coca leaf for the flavoring. It's part of their secret recipe.
Is that why it's so good?
It's just
still in there.
One more note for the history buffs out there. Today's date in 1977, the Voyager 1 spacecraft was launched. And this is, I believe, about a month after the Voyager 2 spacecraft was launched. And not really sure why they launched them in that order, but Voyager 1 was meant to stick around the solar system and inspect Titan, while Voyager 2 was supposed to skip around and basically catch everything else.
Mm. Now, what happened to Voyager 2?
Voyager 2 is still out there, and it's trucking, and as far as...
Why didn't the one stick around Titan? Did they just decide to launch it off?
I don't know what happened to it after that. I think it's still going. Like, Voyager 1 is still rocking around, but it is not nearly as far out as 2.
We have a guest. This is Tom Ditto.
Tom Ditto is leaning in.
Well, they really couldn't put it in orbit on Jupiter because it was going at a velocity that couldn't be captured by the gravity of the planet. But they did use the gravity to change the direction. So Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 went in 90-degree directions, and one went up and the other went out, and they're both still going, but minimally, you know.
Yeah, they keep shutting down more and more instruments just to keep the batteries going, right?
Yeah, they don't use batteries. They have plutonium heating, so they're generating electricity through heat.
Yeah,
radioactive decay, right?
I got that in my trunk too. Yeah.
One day we'll all have it in our basements, folks, but right now it's powering our most powerful space probes, including the Curiosity rover has one of those RTSs, I believe.
Hmm. And then they made up for their apparent trajectory mistake by sending Cassini-Huygens, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Was that the case? Was that the case? It was actually like they were sent as...
I don't know, but it was probably the next mission in line.
Cassini-Huygens?
And the Cassini, that was ended not too long ago, wasn't it?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Okay, folks, that's us winding down here on the Thingularity radio program. Okay, credits are, we have in our biology department, Cody. We have our mathematics department, Albert Flores. Our audio technician is Brian X, the cat wrangler. Our historian is Cody McCaskland. Our comms officer, who is home today, is sick and has our best wishes, which is Professor Von Mothersbaugh. Our basket weaving engineer has been Sam Owen. Our guest has been Tom Ditto, and yours truly, Mr. Conductor. This has been the Thingularity radio program. Everyone have a good night, and remember, there is no such thing as a failed experiment.